something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the window of despair. This was a paraphrased statement of Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities. This episode showcased these sentiments exactly. On one end, in our country, people follow Trump, the city council, and the police. They deified them. They applaud the violence on unarmed black men and other people of color, using justifications such as he wasn't a hero or a saint. He deserved to be killed. But when charges brought in on people destroying criminals the past revered, such as murder, torture, rape, and countless other deeds that the statues exemplify. This is the apex of white privilege and supremacy. Our society is on the precipice of change. The need to uplift Black Lives Matter, as well as unhoused Black Lives Matter, is an example of this. So America and the world is giving notice to corrupt systems and sending the message that we are a part of the solution and that we are not going anywhere. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused. I thank you all for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding.
Hello, can everybody understand me? Everybody hear me? Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Katria Kirby. I go by Lady Bliss. I'm not performing. I'm just going to read or talk. So I'm semi-new to LA. I'm semi-new to California, period. I'm new to the radical actions of rage personally taking over me. I'm new to marching in a mass of thousands, demanding to be heard. I'm new to being able to physically watch as our point actually reaches the higher-ups it was meant for, and accomplishing change in a peaceful manner, as we did right here in this very park. What I am used to is the reason why we are all gathered here today. I know a police state. I just came from one. I grew up in one. I'm from a city where this would never happen. I'm from a city where they can gun down a black youth in the back while he runs away, and it's justified by any means. A city that within a month, everybody moves on, and it just adds a new fear to the mental back pocket. I'm used to roaming around all night long, sober or not, trying to stay awake. But mostly because my bones are freezing and I just can't sleep anywhere. I'm used to staying up walking and walking and sleeping in parking garages and running around like scattered mice. Why? Because it's illegal to actually sleep outside. I'm used to a place where if I get caught sleeping outside, I'll get a ticket, and eventually I'll go to jail for a week, get out, do it over and over and over again. I'm used to not having a tent and not even thinking about having a tent. There's no protest, there's no rally, there's not even a social media group in my home state like that we have here in this city. And my goal and the reason why I'm here is to make sure that it stays that way. My goal is to continue to be able to live for the people, to be able to connect with people that think like me. My goal is to make sure that LA never becomes the same police state that I just ran away from. And that's why I'm here today. Thank you.
George Floyd. Dead or alive, dead or alive. Dead or alive, dead or alive. Better with lies, better in eyes. Hell on the rise, lady of guy. Everyone quiet, pop on dial. Roger, let's take a ride. 15 coppers, 60 popping like 50 choppers. City wanted, they feel this. ET, they knees is bucking. Pick these gloves up, take off my badge and pick these gloves up. Angels love us, daddy told them protect his loved ones. 15 coppers, 60 popping like 50 choppers. City love us, they told us pick up his gloves up. Angels love us, daddy told them protect his love squad. Angels love us, daddy told them protect his love squad. Came with a book, came with an angel, he came with the truth. Came with the truth, praying them play but play with the rules. Aim for the end of you, don't aim for the interviews. Pray for the kid in you, just change beginnings too. Tame all the rage in you, the rangers they gon' get it soon. Label this animals, I'll show them what a dragon do. Came with the camera, bro, they played your lie on channel news. Play with the fam, you lose, I'll be damned if they take nappy with attitudes. Loners and damaged women, homies and back of woods. Roaming crack addicts too, welcome to nappy wood, nigga. We just a camp of cool niggas, we just like Kaepernick, nigga. We sat on tractors with activists with us. Dead or alive, dead or alive. Dead or alive, dead or alive. Better with lies, better than lies. Everyone lie, everyone quiet, pop on down. Let's take a ride. Anti-protest, they can't approach us, they lacking focus. Where they want us, they barely honest, a pack of cronies. Chant the lotus, de-chair the office, declare his promise. Lake of fire for all them who don't know love or who got us. New school Nazis, Judas copies, nigga, who you stopping? Ooh, you cop that, ooh, you got gun, whoop, ooh, you gun miss. Ooh, what happened? Boo, who man me, your pool got man in it. Zulu can't make do your damage, our God can handle it. Ain't it the truth? God is good, he's always good. Can't get a room, I got things I wanna do. Trap in the booth, dab in the moons, get chance in the crew. Sabbath is true, bad equals news, let anarchy rule. Yeah, I'm confused. Man kills man, man gets man too. Anger the youth, who made these rule the baby boomers. They done goofed, black and brown united through this. Hallelujah, soon as tomb, soon as Yeshua. Dead or alive, dead or alive, yeah. Dead or alive, dead or alive. Veteran lies, veteran eyes, hell on the rise, lady a guy, everyone quiet, pop on down, Roger, let's take a ride. Yeah, God bless you all. Thank you for coming out to the protest. Real quick, before I introduce General Dogon, he's been fighting the police since before I was born. I just want to say something that, a thought that came to my mind while everyone was talking. We must defund the police. $600 billion, more than any other country, we must defund the military. We must defund Hollywood and this narrative of violence and hate, where the police are the hero and there are bad, evil guys. I live on the streets. Where are these bad guys? I only see people. I only see love. We have to defund the hate narrative. God bless you all.
Yo, yo, give it up for Iman, y'all. Y'all can do better than that. Give him a little bit more, y'all. Give him more, give him more.
I got a chance to listen to him one time, and I was blown away, and I can't wait for you to hear him. Brother Theodore Henderson, come on up.
Good afternoon, everyone. I have to be honest, I can't top his beautiful protest songs. As you look back through the Civil Rights era, that's what propelled movement and change. First of all, I want to get some business out the way. I want somebody to repeat after me and says, all Black lives matter.
All Black lives matter.
Black women's lives matter.
Black women's lives matter.
Black trans lives matter.
Black men's lives matter.
Black unhoused lives matter.
Black unhoused lives matter.
All Black lives matter.
All Black lives matter.
I cannot be free unless every one of us is free. And we cannot get forward if we are continually tearing each other down. I say this to my white brothers and sisters, and I say this to my Black brothers and sisters. We need to squash that nonsensical idea of what, who we are, and who, how should we express ourselves in this perilous time. My name, as you know, is Theo Henderson, and I am an unhoused man, and I've been there for 7 years. What people first think of me is that I am unhoused and I am a criminal. They don't see that I'm unhoused and an educated man. They don't care. That's one thing we have in common. I don't give a damn if you have a house in Beverly Hills. If the police pulls you over, you are a criminal. If you're an unhoused person that's sitting in the park, you're a criminal. If you are sitting down and bedding down on the concrete and you happen to be in an area that have NIMBYs, or which for is acronym for not in my backyard, you are going to jail or you're going to be criminalized. I've gone through all of that. I've gone through unhoused white vigilantism. I've gone through terrorism from police officers that look like me and some that don't look like me. And I do mean guns drawn, billy clubs out, in the rain to throw me out of the park because they felt I was dangerous. I was a crazy drug dealing Black man. But my story doesn't begin in the park like many of our unhoused friends and neighbors. We didn't grow up one day and says we're going to live out on the street. We had a life, we had a family, and so did I. I was an educator, I was a teacher. I was a middle school, high school, and elementary school teacher, and it happened to me. I had the misfortune of falling ill. I am a diabetic, and I am sorry to say, because how capitalism and the diet that I had, because of the low financial vista that I had in my, at the moment, I ate unhealthily, trying to stay on that rat race. And you know for a fact that people don't pay teachers well. They give us all the hell and grief, but police officers get over $100,000 and we get damn near the crumbs. So let's not kid ourselves. And I also want to point out, I was a damn good teacher because I put money out of my own pocket to support distressed area students that couldn't afford the supplies that was needed for them to matriculate through the system. That's another untold story. And most Black teachers and most teachers in general do that. So my story begins one day teaching and I wasn't feeling that well. 3 days later, I woke up knowing where I was. I had a diabetic coma. I was close to having a stroke. And I had it in school. And as you probably know, that most parents love their kids. It distresses when you see a Black person go and have a convulsion or fall and go to the bathroom on themselves because of a medical issue. That's think of the children. And you can probably imagine when I went back to school, the conversations that was had for me to retire or to be let go or take a sick leave. Also, the problem was that I had a choice to stay in the place that I lived with no job or pay for my medical bills, which was ridiculously expensive. Medicare, before Obamacare happened, it was ridiculous to try to take care of yourself in an apartment with no family and nobody to make you take you to physical therapy, going through different things to learn how to speak well again or to talk and be able to take the medication that you need and the diet again. So good friends allowed me to sleep on that couch. They allowed me sleeping on the floor. Some allowed me to stay until, again, those same people that you live with in your neighborhoods see me coming and going, or hobbling at the time, see me as a threat. They contact the landlord. This dangerous guy is lurking around and loitering around. And as you probably have guessed, eviction were given to my friends. So I had to leave. I scrambled up a little money and lived in hotels. And I'm telling you this story to understand several issues. It doesn't matter the economic strata that you're from, the educational degrees that you have, anybody can become a house. Life happens to all of us. And if you do not believe so, the next 120,000 that live in the apartments due to COVID-19, they will be joining us in the ranks. One other thing, 4 years ago, I almost lost my life. I got stabbed and was very close. I was in the hospital ICU. I now have a very long, very visible surgical scar on my. I was stabbed in 8 places. I was in ICU for over like 3 weeks. I was on 2 different IVs. I was on a respirator. And one of the things that I want you to understand about being unhoused, if you don't have insurance, your care is very, very haphazard. They told me that I was to go and take care of myself out there in the street to take care of the wound. Now, I understand, I want you to be very clear. Trying to do self-care out there on the street where you can get infection would be ridiculous. I would not have survived. But one of the things I want to talk about is substance usage. I got almost addicted to the painkillers because the pain is excruciating. And many times when we see people that have substance usage issues or mental health crises, it's a confluence of things. Sleep apnea, sleep deprivation, and anybody can become addicted to substance uses due to trying to make the pain go away. That changed my idea on what I see people out here using because of the harsh realities of it. I damn sure am going to tell you, you get stabbed and get caught in 8 different times and you have to endure surgery, you'll be begging for the morphine or the morphine, and it was another medicine that I had to mitigate that pain. I want us to look at the humanity of people. When we see people, let's not judge them. Let's not diminish them. They're still human beings. There was somebody's son or daughter. That was somebody that had life into them, and they had dreams. Their dreams did not end up with them being addicted. Substance usage is not a physical choice. It is a health issue. And when you criminalize these people like me, I'm in that boat too, as well, then you diminish their humanity. When you defund the police and put the monies into way to help our humanity, then we liberate all of us. All rising tide. The last thing I want to leave all of you with today is this. Shirley Chisholm, she used to say, if you don't have a seat at the table, then bring your own damn folding chair. I thank you all for listening, and I hope to keep the light of understanding.
Something, you know what it was created for, when it was created, why it was created, and what it's been doing since it was created, right? And so we know the history of them. So we already know what they do to us. No good, right? So because it ain't by coincidence that LA leads the nation year after year in shooting unarmed people of color. That ain't no damn coincidence. It ain't by coincidence that LA leads the nation in incarceration and criminalization. That ain't no damn coincidence. And it ain't no damn coincidence that L.A. is the most racist city west of the Mississippi. Right? And it ain't no damn incident, right, that L.A. leads the nation in homeless. And the majority of those homeless faces you see on Skid Row is black. That ain't no damn coincidence, right? I don't call those coincidences. I don't even believe in coincidence, right? That ain't no damn coincidence. And so that's why you're here today. That's the reason why I'm here today. You should be pissed off if the reason why you're here today. You should be mad as hell, right? We should still be in the streets. We finna get in the streets right now. But the reason why we need to get in the streets and stay in the streets is because when it's all over with, we ain't gonna have nothing coming. They ain't gonna wanna see us for the next 50 years. They ain't even gonna wanna talk to us. So we better get everything we got coming right now. So the time now is for us to take it in the streets. When you look around the other parts of the nation, you see people taking it in the streets. And they rechanging, redesigning our communities. That's what we gotta do. We gotta take it to the streets and redesign our community. For there's housing for everybody or housing for nobody. We can't leave our homeless brothers out in the streets. We gotta remove the police. I thought that'll say, we don't need them. Send their ass on the rocket ship to planet dump dumps on damn where, right? All they do is take all the goddamn money around here. And so, when we take it to the streets, we need to snatch down some Confederate statues and all that too, along the way, right? We need to totally change our communities to where it reflect us. You see these capitalist-ass businesses blood-sucking us. Why we gotta pay $4.99 plus tax for some you can buy at the 99-cent store, right? So we need to remove them out of our community. So now, we ready to go. Can we get some marching moving? And when we leave, we ain't gonna stop. We won't leave the magnet until we own this mother.
So check it out, y'all. Give it up for General Dogon.
In San Diego Oceanside, they accept funds for a 50-bed year-round shelter. Missing a 24-year-old unhoused man last seen in Echo Park. Alaska Assembly looks to expand where it can set up shelters. Santa Ana, California will provide temporary shelters, will shift from temporary shelters to something more permanent. In Los Angeles will provide over 6,700 beds to the unhoused near freeways, over the freeways, and inside the tunnels. Permanent shelter in Costa Mesa will be built near the John Wayne Airport. A quick comment on this. It is a common refrain after countless issues, protests, putting pressure to the city council, and then legal action to provide shelters for unhoused people. If you listen to Weedy Unhoused, you've always heard that many unhoused people do not like shelters because of the penitentiary-style organization scheme that goes on. Also, the fanaticism of the religious organizations that criminalize and have a toxic relationship with the unhoused community. So this solution is not really a solution. It's a holding station for unhoused people to put your foot closer to their neck. And this is Unhoused News. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused, and right now I stumbled upon a well-built shower, and it has signs that says even ancient Rome had public bathhouses. Mayor Eric Garcetti took our showers. Can you talk about this? What happened?
Well, about a month, maybe to a month and a half ago, my friend Iman here lives in this tent told us that they stopped letting people shower down at the homeless shelter.
Okay.
They used to shower like every other hour on the hour, you know, 2:30, 4:30, so we could shower.
Right.
Since they couldn't do that anymore, we're stuck with the one shower a week at the trucks, which is a blessing, but still a pain.
Right.
So we were looking up showers, camp showers, things online. They were either expensive or junk.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to run a small company doing, you know, home repairs, construction, things like that.
Uh-huh.
So basically, what I did is I decided to do this. Now, altogether, the materials were only about $70.
Oh,
and,
really?
That could be chopped down a bit.
Okay.
LA Power actually brought us out to the power jet, to be specific. This could just be optional, that's like extra. So basically, I did a basic crane job.
Okay.
Did 6 foot by 3 foot.
Okay.
Squared it off.
Right.
There's two pieces of plywood on top.
Right.
Cut a hole a foot in diameter. This comes down like this.
Oh, I see.
Babe, or Zach, could you go grab the thing from right in my door frame?
Right.
So basically, so this comes in. We got a little floor here.
Right.
Now, so I dug a trench, a little hole.
Oh, I
runs
see.
All the way over to here, so it goes right into the sewer. Whoa. So it doesn't actually destroy our ground for the city property.
Okay.
Bait, like I said, all basically the duct tape's there just so we don't have any like actual like, you know, things that don't hurt people.
Right.
We got hooks over here. You can put clothes on.
Okay.
Now, what I'm trying to do is, and could you get me a chair of some sort? Because I'm short.
All right, okay.
So you take one of these 5-gallon, you know, things that a lot of people overlook in their office buildings here, you know.
Right.
This is a blessing. See, this fountain, that fountain, none of our fountains work anymore.
Okay, wow.
I don't know. We think it was the city.
Oh, man.
They just, like,
took out the water?
Just put it anywhere. So you take one of these. Now, it's usually full. Now, a full one of these will get you a good 10, 15 minutes of shower time.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not. There you go. And then you just put the spigot in here.
Uh-huh.
Right over. Turn it on and let the water run.
Oh, I see. Wow.
And, you know, once it actually gets going.
Okay.
You know, okay. Let it get going.
All right.
Am I missing? Oh, missing a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very ingenious.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, the top is on.
Oh, okay.
The suction was preventing.
Okay.
But yeah, if you look, it comes down once it fills up.
Yes.
You got a full shower head there.
Oh, impressive.
See,
impressive.
These fill up. There we go.
Oh, right.
So, you know, you go in, you bathe up, mm-hmm. you know, get going.
Right.
You rinse off. Get
right.
10, 15 minutes to go. Now, oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's what it was. That was the stop on top. Now, I wonder why this one hole is bigger than the rest right now.
Okay.
Someone might have popped it, might need... And it's all very easy to repair. See, this is all, I don't know if anyone's familiar with painter's plastic.
Oh, painter's plastic.
They,
oh,
they
really?
Put this down before they do a paint job or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get paint on your carpet and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So all this is, once we did the frame job, we were like, well, we could just plywood it all up, but that's an extra, you know, 15 bucks. We just got one of these,
mm-hmm.
run around with it, staple gun it on,
mm-hmm.
and up here, the two pieces of plywood are together.
Right, right.
We just take the top off, put new plastic in, put it on.
Yeah, oh, wow, what? I'm impressed.
That's a You're very a good amazing. Friend.
I'm yeah, it is.
Absolutely, I guess. Zach here's a blessing.
Yes.
He came into camp. He's actually newer to our camp. He's been here like a week and a half. Since he's got here, he's helped every person he's met.
Oh, perfect.
Sometimes a little too much. It's him a little bit. He's had to move his camp because he was being taken advantage of.
Yeah. Well,
but yeah, since we've built this to stay on topic, we've discussed it with other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually supposed to be going to other camps like down at Huntington Park and stuff like that and build ones for them.
Oh, cool.
Just to kind of get it going. It's been trouble getting it done with us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to build it here, transport it whole,
right,
there,
right.
transport it, then transportation is a problem,
yes.
scheduling is a problem.
Yes.
Plus, the whole reason I don't have the company and stuff anymore is I had a big car accident.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, a couple years ago, and it gave me a bum leg, and now I'm limping
Mobility,
around.
Right.
Like right now, it's hurting. I don't know if you can't tell, my posture's changed from confident to
right.
hurting.
Right.
I need to have a surgery done. My spine slipped or something like that. I slipped a disc.
Yes.
I have a pinched nerve. And the pinched nerve is causing me to have sciatica.
Ah,
and it's horrible. It's the worst pain I've ever had. So,
How long have you been out here?
I've been in Echo Park for about 6 months now.
Oh, okay.
I'm originally from Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
When that all happened, when my money ran dry, we came out here.
Oh, I see.
When we left Massachusetts, there was snow to our eyeballs.
Oh,
can you see
wow.
why we came here?
I
you
can
know?
Imagine so.
You know, people die out there just for the cold.
Yeah.
You know? So out here is great. You know, the people in this park are great. Even the homeless. Best camp I've been to yet. You know, everyone tries to pick up after themselves. You know, we find trash, we try to pick it up,
mm-hmm.
Things like that.
Oh, perfect.
I mean, of course, you have your bad apples everywhere you go.
Uh-huh.
You know, bad apples, irony, you know. But no, this one's really good. You know, we all try to help each other, we stay together.
Mm-hmm.
There's no stealing, you know, we drugs to a minimum. We all smoke weed together.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
A family that smokes together, stays together.
Right.
So, but no, it's really good. Well, who are you guys with?
I'm Theo Henderson with Weedy Unhoused. I deal with a podcast that deal with people that are living on the streets. I too am unhoused, and I have created a podcast and hosted to talk about different people's stories that lives on the streets.
Absolutely. So. Well, we completely appreciate you. Maybe we can set up a time. You can meet me and my wife.
Yes, please.
Honey,
I would love to.
Honey. Want to be on a podcast real quick? Say hi to people? No, not right now? Not okay. Time. All right. All right. Well, I told him if he'd like to talk sometime, we can schedule the time and talk.
Indeed.
No? But yeah, no, that'd be great. We'd love to get our story out there. And what we really appreciate is people getting awareness out,
yes.
Trying to actually help us. And, yes. You know, there are more open homes in this country than there are homeless people.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no reason for us to be out on the street. No, I totally agree. Thank you again. What is your name again?
Well, they call me Batman, but my name is Zach.
All right. Yeah. Zach, Batman, thank you. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy and House. I thank you for showing us this, and we will definitely come back and give you guys another featured interview.
Absolutely. Find out why they call me Batman.
Yes. Will do. This is Theo Henderson. I thank you all for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding. From Weedy House. I'm here and before a protest, and I'm talking to another unhoused neighbor, and I want to get his intake on what you feel about the protests out here. What's your thoughts on it?
My thoughts on this protest is the Rainbow Coalition should be equally involved in this, because not only does Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. All colors are in the rainbow, so it should be a combination of the Rainbow Coalition with special emphasis on the blacks, because the blacks, they have moved the blacks to the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to job, housing, and social living and all of that, you know? So that's my intake on the protest. Like I said, the Rainbow Coalition should be equally involved in this, because all lives matter. All colors, like I said, is in the rainbow. And the rainbow symbolizes you, the Caucasian, the Oriental, the Hispanics, and all the above. All races should be.
You mean Asians? Oriental is a rug. But here is the thing. Right now, they're focusing on the brutality. Did you hear what happened with George Floyd?
No, I didn't. No, I'm late on that. I haven't had the privilege of listening at a TV or being around like communication, like what news is being reported. I hear it through the streets, through the grapevine.
And what did you hear?
I heard, like, honestly, I see signs say the police kill the cops. They killed somebody named Rihanna. I don't know.
Rihanna Taylor. Yeah.
And I feel like the blacks that's out here that's being homeless, they are targeted, because, like, they feel like the homeless doesn't matter, and the homeless population is comprised mostly of blacks. So they trying to orchestrate the homeless blacks. They got us out though, and they say the coronavirus, well, they giving all the low bottom jobs to the Hispanics, so they creating a race war among Hispanics and blacks. That's what the police is doing. They promoting this, and that's my take on it, you know?
Well, thank you. How long have you been out here?
Well, I've been on the street since 2017. I lost my wife in 2017. And I was lied on then. I went to jail, lost my job, my apartment, my car, my everything, because of a lie. And the police, they know I didn't pull no knife up on them. I just got off of work. What I look like carrying a knife? I'm coming home from work. And I got my coffee cup and my car keys in my hand. And my neighbor, which was a black man, lied, him and his girlfriend, said I pulled a knife on him. I ain't pulled no knife on nobody, man. Well, I'm just getting off of work. I don't work with a knife. I'm a custodian. I had my coffee cup and car keys in my head, and they give me 4 years in a stack just to keep me behind the eight ball. That's what the police is doing. They trying to, the blacks, they gonna trump up charges on them, and then, like, give you a strike, and every little thing you do, they gonna come, and like last week, they locked me up for nothing.
I said, what did they say? Why did they lock you up?
Well, they say I had a warrant, but that warrant that they picked me up for, I wasn't supposed to go to court until the 30th of this month.
What was the warrant for?
I mean,
public drunk, and I wasn't drunk.
Oh, my goodness.
And I had just come out the liquor store, had the bottle, and I got the bottle set like I'm sitting down here, like this right here.
Right.
The bottle set right there. I got to arguing with somebody in a marijuana shop, and because they took my friend's weed shop. And I went to talk to them people about it. And the next thing I know, they called the sheriff, and I done walked across the street. I'm gone. I ain't did nothing. And I go over there, they come over, and I got the bottle right there, just like I ain't never been sitting on the curb. And I'm home, and they come over there and lock me up, talking about some public drunk. And I hit the bottle, ain't never been open.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I didn't get your name. My name is Theo.
My name is John Edward Blackman.
Mr. Blackman, thank you very much
for your time and you're telling me what your perspective is. Is there anything or any way that people could help you in your situation?
Well, the only thing I can say, I'm sitting down. I'm not breaking no law. I don't need the police harassing me because I feel like I got a target on my back. And every chance they get, they're going to catch me isolated. They want to come lock me up. They trump up some charges. And I just need some, just like Whitney Houston. She did that movie, Bodyguard.
Right.
I know what that means. She had to have a bodyguard, but they ended up killing her anyway. She didn't drown. Them folks drugged her up and killed her.
Well, thank you, Mr. Blackman. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy & Howes. I thank you all for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy & Howes. I have got here a Life for a Life, a hunger strike. This is a dramatic example of standing up for justice. And I want to know actually what motivated you to do a hunger strike.
Many people probably won't believe these words as I say them because I didn't believe them myself when I experienced it. But I received a message from God.
Okay. And this prompted you to do this. What do you hope to accomplish? How long have you been on a hunger strike?
This is my third day on my hunger strike. And my intentions for this hunger strike with everyone that I meet in the streets here is to spread the message that I want an audience with the mayor. Because you don't take a powerful message to the masses, because what's right is never popular. And if I want to be met with adversity in the streets, then I will just tell my message to everyone. But no, this message is for one person. And if people want me to eat, if people care at all about my life, please send a message to the mayor to talk to Christian Steele.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hopefully people will prompt them, the Mr. Garcetti, to do something about it.
And just before you go, sir, one last thing. Despite my mystery behind my own message, it represents all of us. This message represents all of us. I'm here for the freedom of all of us.
There you have it. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy & Howes. I thank you all for listening. And we have an interesting message that was given us on a hunger strike. Let us mill about and see what else we have here. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy & Howes. I'm in the studios with a gentleman that's running for Congress. His name is David Kim, and he has a platform that deals with the unhoused crisis that's going on. Let's introduce David.
Hi, nice. Thanks for having me, Leo. My name is David. I'm running for Congress here in California's 34th Congressional District, which covers downtown LA, Koreatown, Eagle Rock, Highland Park, Lincoln Heights, Westlake, and surrounding neighborhoods.
Excellent. My question is that who are you running against?
I am running against the current incumbent Jimmy Gomez.
Oh.
Yes. He's a self-alleged progressive, but not really progressive at all.
What got you started in wanting to run for Congress?
So 10 months ago, I had no idea I'd be running for Congress. I was actually helping Kenneth Mejia run for Congress.
Yes.
2 years ago. I remember getting a text from him, reading about his platform and realizing, holy shit, like this is the platform to run on and to win. And so I ended up helping him. Unfortunately, he didn't win the election, but as a Green Party candidate, he got there's less than 1% registered as Green in our district, but he managed to win a total 28% of the total vote for the general election.
That's impressive.
So that means a third of Democrats didn't even vote for their own candidate because they don't think he's progressive enough. and he hasn't been really doing anything for the district. So
you're with the Green Party, huh?
I am not with the Green Party, so I was actually trying to get Kenneth to run again, but he was too tired from running because he was so burnt out. So then I was like, okay, fine, then you don't have to run with the Democratic Party, just run Green Party, but he still wouldn't because he was so tired. And so then I was like, you know what, then I'm going to throw my hat into the race. And I think for us to, like, for me, I'm not really, like, because I think the whole Democrat Party is corrupt and corporate anyway. But I think right now, just being realistic, it's a numbers game for us to really have a chance to win the progressives in this district.
Right.
We sort of need to win in Rome, play as they do. And then once we are able to take that to our advantage and win, then yeah, then we can definitely put Los Angeles on the map, because it doesn't make sense that we've been neglected for so long federally on a national level.
You know, I was thinking too, when I never heard of Mr. Gomez, but I had heard of Kenneth Mejia, and I heard about, and there is like a seismic shift going on in the Democratic Party from the old guard, from the new guard, who's saying some of the things are not working, which is one of the reasons why I think Bernie Sanders was much more palatable to people, and people like Andrew Yang, because they were looking for something different, that's something that's going to work instead of the established system that is already out there. So I want to touch in on some issues, because what tell us what your platform is, and then we can get examine those questions and issues.
The main reason that got me to run, I mean, before that, was helping Kenneth's campaign. And the reason why I helped out Kenneth's campaign was, it just doesn't make sense where we have so, like, masses of people having 2 to 3 jobs just to make ends meet, masses of people unhoused. And then now COVID-19, everything's accelerated it, where now we have massive people with no jobs to make ends meet, and now the city's just opening up to brush everything under the carpet, acting like nothing happened. And so we're about to see a bunch of evictions happen. And so I think, kind of long story short, like, I feel like if we don't step up and stand up and run for office, then this is just going to get worse. Our 40-year wage stagnation is going to be 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. And so that's why I feel like you kind of nailed it right on. Like, instead of lip service anymore, where we're bailing out corporations, we really, really, really need to bail out the people right now. And so that's where the old guard and new guard is changing right now, where, like, our campaign, we're refusing to accept any corporate PAC money, any non-corporate PAC money, because we feel like it should really be directly from the people. Because when you have a current congressman who says, hey, everybody should have single-payer healthcare, but then he's taking the biggest donations from Big Pharm, when he says, hey, public college should be free for everybody, but he takes the biggest donations from student debt collectors, it's like, come on, didn't your mom and dad tell you, like, to walk the walk and not just talk the talk? Like, because your actions aren't speaking louder than your words right now, and so...
Case in point, we just, before we started our interview, there was a gentleman over there who was railing against the younger generation. And I had to remind him gently that, you know, his elders did not approve of everything that he did. And it's also, you can't see the world from their eyes, and they can't see the world from your eyes. They realize that there are some things that are broken that the older generation may have didn't take care of, or just basically by indifference or by a change of opinion, it's okay with keeping the status quo.
Yeah.
The younger generation, during their own language and their own ingenuity and innovativeness, are trying to do things and bring change. So with that said, there's a lot of people in Los Angeles, California, downtown, and the areas that you mentioned, there's a strong root, there's a pernicious weed that is sprouted up with, it's called NIMBYism.
Yes.
They have a very hostile idea of where unhoused people should be, where unhoused people should not be, and their viewpoint of the unhoused crisis is so out of touch, and it's been so out of touch for some years. How do you plan on addressing that, and what are you planning on doing to make the unhoused community's voice heard?
Yeah, I mean, in regards to the NIMBYs, to first let you know clearly where I am, I'm a FIMBYist. So beyond YIMBY, I think YIMBYs are great, but I think we need to go a little further in the sense of, with Los Angeles, we have less than 10,000 public housing units, which is so minuscule compared to other cities and counties all over the country. And that's because in the 1950s, there was actually a movement to stop public housing from happening. And I think, I forgot what it was called. It was called like the anti-socialist or whatever group. group. But then they succeeded, and now we have, and that's actually made our housing crisis even worse, where we have gentrification continuing to happen, but yet our communities and people continue to get displaced or evicted and have just our parks and our streets to really call home now. And so I think there needs to be really a push where we are ending all developer money donations, and that obviously has to come on a federal level with ending Citizens versus United. But before that even happens, our current congressman, although he advocates for ending Citizens versus United, why can't he just take an initiative to stop taking real estate developer money as well? And that's what I think Los Angeles right now, we have the biggest problem is nobody, we need somebody to shine the spotlight and the flashlight on Los Angeles corrupt politics, because like you know, Justin Jong-woo Kim, who paid $500,000 to the LA city official the other day, he's also the same donor for my opponent as well. So you see LA being so corrupt in its developer money cash politics that this needs to expose. So one of my goals after getting elected into office is to expose this completely and have Los Angeles be investigated by the federal government with the money that's being taken right now. But then secondly, I think, so we need to end corruption at where it starts. And that starts with like everywhere here. Like my opponent, his wife is the chief of operations for Mayor Garcetti himself. So it's like when you see that kind of, not to say that that inherently is bad, but if you're a federal congressman and your wife is the chief of operations for the mayor of Los Angeles, then there should be some better coordination between the housing funds that are delivered, like with the community block development grant. They granted up to $10 billion in the CARES Act, but where do we see the money? How is that being funneled? Are the cities and counties really working together with that? Has our congressman even had a discussion with that, with our mayor about that? Mm-hmm. So I think in terms of that, like on the federal, state, and local level, everything is just shit, and so that needs to change. That's the first thing. But now number two, how do we do with the solutions? And so our campaign, we've completely, fully embraced the Homes Guarantee, mm-hmm. which was started by the People's Action, which was also sort of like an offshoot of the Bernie movement back in 2016. Mm-hmm. But the Homes Guarantee is all about reinvesting into public housing. There's about $70 billion worth of improvements that need to be made to current public housing. Mm-hmm. And most of the people in public housing are people of color, and it's completely racist for them not to fix and make improvements to the current housing. That's the first thing. And then number two, we need to go ahead and build 12 million social housing units, because that's the number of households that are in poverty right now, and that are homeless across the nation. And so it's building that minimum 12 million. And then of that 12 million, setting aside for, in terms of permanent supportive housing with wraparound services for those who need it in whatever areas that they need, and being able to also cap. So for these social housing units, it sort of mirrors the models in Europe, where we would be able to cap the income of different qualifying residents, where they don't have to pay more than a third of their income, because currently in the nation, we have 40 plus million renting households. Half of them pay more than a third of their income, and at least a fourth of them pay more than half of their income. And so when you think about that, rent is really something that really ties down the people. It's increasing. In our district, for example, the average rent for a one-bedroom apartment is $2,000 a month, yet the median income for a family of four is $36,000. So you wonder, how in the world is anybody able to live like that? Yet our elected officials continue to get reelected, saying that they're helping the people and they're doing all of this. But kind of what the process is right now, Theo, is they're going to DC, they're legislating in a room behind closed doors, and then they come out and they're like, hey guys, we got you crumbs, aren't you happy? When it should actually be the other way around, where they're talking with Theo, where they're talking with me, where they're talking with Carlos, and they're like, hey guys, what do you think are our issues right now? What relief do you want to see? And then taking that and then going to DC and then legislating. But it's the other way around. And I think what the problem is right now, I think going back to the old guard, new guard that you had pointed out, is in regards to, I think the older, I don't know, the establishment Democrats, they don't really think that corporate donations are a big deal. But actually, when you look back at the course of history with the death of the pension in 1978, when the 401k was created, that was the result of big companies lobbying Congress to pass on the risk of retirement to the people instead, because they didn't want to pay for that shit. Now we see the same thing with everything else. And so where are we going to draw the line to stop this? but our elected officials continue to bail out corporations. And so I think it's really a time to go ahead and say no, enough is enough. And so we have down ballot progressives all across the country running in different congressional races. If you go on Twitter and just type in the hashtag down ballot progressives. And so a lot of us, we're working on different issues that are important for our region. For us, Los Angeles, it's obviously housing. And so with that, we need a national bill of tenants' rights. We need rent control. We need a right to counsel for everyone. And we need to go ahead and expand this at a faster pace. And I mean, it's not to say that like YIMBYs, they're doing a great job of removing exclusionary zoning policies and allowing for multi-dwelling units mm-hmm. and all of that. That's great. But I think we need to go further. And that's where the FIMBY is.
I think that's an excellent point, because I actually want to go even further too, is with the idea of that needs to be overhauled. I was talking before we got here about the Project Room Key. And unfortunately, the city has allowed old former shelters to have these old repressive ideas and triggering behaviors to house unhoused people. For example, curfews. That's a problem. And I was telling them about it. That triggers me, because especially as a person of color, I don't want to be locked in or told where I can be or not be. The second thing is the lack of autonomy. For example, you can't get a key. Someone has to key you in. They use an excuse talking about the nurse is going to be as leaves at 7 o'clock, but that's unacceptable. Still, you know, they go home and so why are you suggesting that unhoused people need to be incarcerated? They need to be locked somewhere. They need to be shut away. Yeah. And this is not necessarily always NIMBYs. This is people that are in service providers for unhoused people that believes this. Yeah. And if we're going to truly change the housing crisis and housing, how we deal with the unhoused population, we need to have a very, a paradigm shift in the respect how we treat them. There are also another issue. There are people out here that use substances. And then you tell them that they can't use substances as if it's a voluntary choice, it's a health issue, a health matter, or they have mental health crisis. Yeah. You throw them out and because you're trying to treat it as a dry out shelter or whatever. That is not acceptable. You know where they are. You need to meet them where they are, and you need to be able to re-examine or reshape. But that ties into the NIMBYism. Yeah. NIMBYism creates and dictates the punitive ordinances that we have, the policies that we have, and people, that well-meaning people that get involved, they don't understand that their foothold is very entrenched into the mud. So we have to do a very paradigm shift in all things, and that's why I do Weedy and House, because I advocate for it. Yeah. The second question I have, and the wind is blowing it away, is this. What are your thoughts on Project Room Key?
Yeah, with Project Room Key, I mean, it's just interesting how suddenly you check one day after they report their stats on Twitter. But it's like, why do you have suddenly 3,000 bills without there being any updates? What are you guys just changing the numbers in the Excel spreadsheet? And so I think the first thing is accountability. Mm-hmm. There should actually be a deeper accountability process where people are able to do public comment, where there's actually weekly updates on that, and people are able to contribute to how that process is being done. Because right now it's without any public contribution and with any public involvement. It's just whoever is assigned to do it in the city government is doing it. And I think even with that, on a federal level, what our congressmen or what federal elected officials could have done is, hey guys, when we're allocating $3 billion to community block development, we're allocating $4 billion to assistance services and housing authorities and $5 billion to another. When we do this, let's attach the condition that they need to commandeer hotels so that when they're able to tap into these funds. And why don't we see that coordination being done? Because if that had been done, then we could see a bigger involvement in Project Room Key. Then we could see actually people being in it. And in terms of, and then that goes to say the mayor should have commandeered hotels to go ahead and do it and not just ask them to participate in a crisis like this. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
And so that's where our federal officials, where I know a lot of hotels owners are like, oh, but if we let them in, our hotel's going to be damaged. First of all, it's not going to be.
Exactly.
But second of all, to alleviate whatever their concerns are, like, here's a fund that you can use to fix whatever imaginary issues you have. And so that's what it should have been done, but I mean, I'm not gonna.
But the NIMBYism, that's what the part of the problem was. It's like the NIMBYism is so pervasive. They know full well after what the Project Room Key was over that they were going to renovate those places anyway. It just was a excuse. They even sued the cities and things of that nature. The issue is, I'll give you a perfect one. The Salvation Army out in Bell, California, has a very punitive policy. You have to go through the wand all the time as if you're a criminal, and then you cannot stay in your bed area, and they use the excuse because someone will steal your stuff. Now, as a human being that has their own autonomy, at the time I was injured, I, you know, some days I want to just lay down like anybody else, like if they are unhoused. But you couldn't do that until a certain time, because the caseworker at the time told me, because the county demands that you leave the place, leave the area, the bed area.
Yeah.
So these are the issues that I think that really needs to be addressed, because people are talking about Project Room Key, and then when they find out like one of the residents didn't want to go, it's because of these issues.
Yeah.
It's like we as an unhoused community, we're on the verge of protesting too, because Black Lives Matter should be a wake up call to you to understand these things that you guys are doing. No matter how you felt that this was doing the best thing, it's over. These ideas that you have, it's going to require Congress people or people that in the office to really put the pressure on them and to tell them that this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
Another issue is, why do the city officials believe shelters are the answer for the unhoused community?
In regards to the whole shelter idea, first of all, it's I think what the biggest issue is that's not in their priorities, to be honest, Theo. And mm-hmm. I mean, if it was in their priorities, then would shelters be the solution? Mm-hmm. No, it wouldn't. Like, if they actually freaking cared, shelters wouldn't even come up. Because if they were to even understand the way that shelters work, or even understand what rules and absurd policies are being put in place that they're probably not even aware of, or they are completely aware of, mm-hmm. then that even shows the callousness of their hearts. But I think this whole idea of shelters is steeped into this. It's a mere cop-out. It's like, it's a cop-out for elected officials to say that they're doing something when they're actually not. And so that's another, and sad to say, I mean, I'm not an ageist at all. I mm-hmm. totally am not.
Mm-hmm.
But sad to say, I think with our politics, there's this old mentality that also needs to be renewed and changed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we need to go ahead and change the old guard with the new guard coming mm-hmm. in. Because these, our elected officials, they're in the mentality of like, of putting people in shelters, throwing away their belongings, doing what they think is right for them, when it's like, dude, you're throwing away their entire possessions. Like, it's services, not sweeps. And I think that's what, like, even our whole city was like, oh, like, no, we're going to continue with our sweeps. But the court case, what was it, a month or 2 months ago?
Yeah. You couldn't do that. Was it Boise versus... Martin versus Boise.
Yes,
Martin versus Boise.
Martin
yes.
versus Boise. So,
yes.
Like, even with that, it's like... It clearly shows that our officials actually don't have the priorities in the heart there. And so I think from now on, like, a lot of us need to be vigilant in the sense of who are we electing and re-electing into office, and where their platforms are. And I think the key thing is, like, what my mom taught me is, like, and what everybody is, you always, instead of talking the talk, you always need to walk the walk. Mm-hmm. And it's really putting your money where the mouth mm-hmm. where your mouth is. And looking at the LA budget, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously you probably know where 54% of it was originally allocated to the LAPD.
Yep.
And then we have neighborhood done with, I serve on the MacArthur Park Neighborhood Council Services.
Oh, okay.
And with our funds being super minuscule, it's like a fraction of a percentage compared to the LAPD.
Right.
And it's like, what? Why do we exist then if you're not going to give us any money?
Exactly.
Like, and then they say they have no money to go ahead and, like, I think that I saw a graphic the other day. The city, if they spent, I think the number was 500 or 600 million,
mm-hmm.
Just a portion of the LAPD budget and reinvested that,
yeah,
we wouldn't have any unhoused communities here.
Well, and that's a very good point, because here's another thing. It's like, this is like a system, a plan is in place. First, you got the developers. They want to come in and gentrify or colonize the area and displace people of color and housing insecure people.
Yeah.
So they come in. They use the city council to enact things like BIDs, Business Improvement District. In fact, I saw one of the BID meetings about how they have over 25,000 bids in the country. Uh-huh. And to that end, they use those bids to displace and have a close relationship with the LAPD or police officers around the world to help displace, ticket, cite, house to unhoused people so that can, what they call, instead of gentrify, enliven the area so pedestrian traffic could take place that are able to spend money in their areas.
Yeah.
So the areas, the issue is, they know that there's going to be some displacement. They know that there's going to be some problems. But the issue is, how can we defund the police and defund bids and break up this relationship? The LAPD is basically a mafia chieftain. They have controlled the narrative in every area. They're always in some conversation. They're with the bids. They're with the sanitation. Every time you look, that they are somewhere infiltrating with the neighborhood council or business improvement business owners. They slither their way into that and just make it seem like that they're indispensable. And if you don't have it, then they use the most extreme examples that they have. What happens if you don't have murders or rapes and things?
Yeah.
So but the majority of the crimes that they are getting are quality of life issues.
Yeah.
You know, so I want to know what can we do to help try to dismantle these bids, because it has to be some kind of dramatic example to stop this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, in addition, obviously, I think electropolitics is the most basic thing. That's the least. But right now, like, I think what we really need to do is find any means and all means possible right now at this point. And so if it is going into protests, if it is calling into public comments, I think recently in the past 2 months, like public comments, 400 people are calling in at a time where like about a year ago, hardly anybody called into public comments.
Exactly.
And so right now is the time for us to really push for change. And I know that a lot of people are like, dude, David, dude, Theo, you guys are being too aggressive. Like, cut down on it. I understand the anger, but it's like, no, you don't understand the anger then if you're saying that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not even close to what we should be exhibiting to our officials right now.
Mm-hmm.
We should be like, I mean, in terms of like rioting and stuff, I think it's completely okay for the people to do at this point, because the people have been taken, manipulated with their money all this time anyway,
mm-hmm.
and kicked off onto the streets. And so I think right now it's engaging in protests, it's engaging in discussions like this, it's leading efforts, whether it be petitions, but I think it's really being voicing your opinion, even if it's flooding your officials' offices
mm-hmm.
in person or by phone mm-hmm. or through email.
Right.
We must do all means necessary, because it doesn't make sense that we have police officers
right. guarding a bathroom.
Dispatched to a bathroom.
Exactly. I think it's ridiculous.
When there's no violence involved. What the heck? Like,
what are they going to do? They're going to kick in the bathroom to make sure you're doing number one or number two? It's so ludicrous. This is money wasted by Mitchell Farrell's office.
Yeah, and so I'm hopeful in the sense that I know City Councilman Herb Wesson, he did a bill where the language is pretty general, so we don't know where it's going yet,
mm-hmm.
but it's about sending medical responders and social workers and health workers to situations that don't require police officers to show up.
Absolutely.
Like, to these situations where we don't have police officers showing up
right.
at protests or in bathrooms or in terms of trying to enliven the pedestrian area. I don't even know what that term was.
So it's basically like, gentrified, but he caught himself and says enliven the area. That's the dog whistle.
Yeah. So I think right now, but we have great city council candidates, and it's super important that people like Nithya Raman
mm-hmm.
make it to city council, because people like her, once they're elected to office, holy shit, LA City will change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's important for people to run on the state level, the federal level, and the local level.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, let's say when I make it into office,
mm-hmm.
when Nithya makes it into city,
mm-hmm.
me and her are going to be talking a lot
mm-hmm.
in terms of how do we coordinate the federal and the local resources and support together.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what officials should be doing.
Exactly.
That's not what they're
Absolutely.
Not doing right now. So
I was going to ask you, because I saw on your page, your platform, what is your platform of Community First? So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Community First, I think it goes back to what I was telling earlier about how it's so absurd that elected officials, I feel like they're so disconnected from their base and their community. So like they're like a balloon tied to, so generally the same picture should be like an analogy wise. Let's say the elected officials represent balloons
right.
tied down to the ground, which
okay.
is a community. but it seems like right now, like, they've been cut off, mm-hmm. and they're just flowing off in space by themselves in their ideological mindsets of what would be perfect and what's not perfect.
Right, right.
And then they're bickering about their own personal ideologies of mm-hmm. what they think should happen and not happen, mm-hmm. instead of actually going back to the base and saying, hey, guys, what do you think should be doing? What do you think should be done? Mm-hmm. And then going back. And so I think right now the biggest problem that we have in D.C. is our elected officials, no matter how hard they try to connect or fathom or experience what the daily suffering is like for everybody in our district, they're not able to comprehend what that is. Mm-hmm. So because they're not able to comprehend what that is, they're not able to legislate properly, mm-hmm. because they're legislating like completely off target. They're like throwing spaghetti on the wall and trying to see what sticks. And so I think the first thing that needs to happen is every single federal official should have weekly town halls before they go to legislate in D.C.
Can I interrupt there too? No, go ahead. Because what I noticed, and that's an excellent idea, but I don't want to say I'm playing advocate, but I... Oh, yeah. Because usually what I've noticed when I go to City Hall meetings, I always see the NIMBYs. The NIMBYs seem to overwhelm the whole process. And they have the ear of the council members because they throw money at the campaign. They use social media to rile up people by hatred, fear, and miseducation. And they get these, for example, 4118. 5611, yeah. 6444. All it takes is an angry, housed person that has some wealth or has the code word that they feel that the unhoused person is a danger to their children at a park or a school or things like that. How can we get to a point where it's equitable that we don't give in to the community hatred or community ignorance? What can we do to stop that?
Yeah, and I think that's where it's very important to be more aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. I think we need to break... What's a great thing about America is that it's about this individual freedom, personal liberties, and all of that. But I think it's to a point where we've become too me, where it hasn't really become a family-focused, community-focused, mm-hmm. broader perspective in mind.
Right, right.
And so with that being said, I think not only when... And I think a lot of us now realize when we actually... stand together and bond in power, we mm-hmm. actually can make a bigger difference.
Right,
and
right.
you see that with a very prime example of that is People City Council.
Yes, yep.
People City Council, they're not like a group of 12 million people or a million people. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're a group of a handful of people mm-hmm. that came together and said, hey guys, we need to mobilize and organize. They raised $2.5
million
on GoFundMe.
Yeah, please.
Like that's what happens when the people actually wake up and come together.
Yes.
It's just that we haven't seen the sleeping giant wake up yet.
Yes.
And right now we're slowly waking up the giant.
Yes.
So if we continue to organize and mobilize,
yes.
where we have groups, like our groups are getting bigger. K-Town Brawl is getting bigger. Yeah. Ground Game's getting bigger.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Tenants Union is getting bigger.
Weedy on House.
Weedy on House is getting bigger.
Yeah,
no Olympics is getting bigger.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting bigger.
Yeah.
And I think that's a testament to show like people are slowly waking up.
Mm-hmm.
So when people slowly wake up, there's going to be a revolution soon. And
mm-hmm.
so like it's not just for cliche or hashtag sake that we're saying we're the revolution, but it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it is happening right now. And so don't ever underestimate the power of mobilizing and organizing together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, if we're able to organize and mobilize just as well as the NIMBY people do,
mm-hmm.
we can do it more powerfully.
Exactly.
Because we have bigger numbers. And so if we all show up, we can easily overpower them, but it's just a matter of us showing up. It's a matter of us listening to this podcast and then saying, hey, what's the next step? What's in it? What should we be doing? Because to be honest, Theo, and I know that you would agree and people listening,
mm-hmm.
but the whole role of an elected official is to represent the will of the people. And if they're not representing the will of the people, what are they doing and why are they there?
Exactly.
And so for me, our campaign and once elected, we are always going to be co-governing with the people.
Mm-hmm.
So we will always be meeting with members of the community and not corporate donors because we don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first and foremost thing of why it's important to always have a grassroots campaign, because you're not pledging your allegiance to any corporate interest. You don't have to save your time for a meeting with them, because
mm-hmm.
now you can actually meet with the people. And so for us, we plan to co-govern with the people. And so if you're listening and you see issues on our platform and you're like, hey David, this is great, maybe this would also be good, because we take feedback from everyone, because this is what co-governing with the people looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way we can start going ahead and I think the first thing, going back to your question, Theo, is realizing that we do have power, and that power is this thing called hope inside of us, because as long as our hope is there, we can use that hope and convert it into power and show that power, and it's just us realizing that and then using that power. So it's just those two things involved, really. But, yeah.
I think you covered everything I wanted to cover. I was going to say, are you going to be giving any public speeches or anything like that that we could follow or put our audience into that's interested in for making sure that you get on office?
Yeah. So if you actually visit davidkim2020.com, we have recordings of past live streams and town halls we've done on what does universal basic income look like? What is Medicare for All? What is COVID-19 relief being given in this sense? So we have videos on that. We will be doing more live streams in the future with different guest speakers, hopefully with the people from Homes Guarantee as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we are hoping to have a debate with the current incumbent probably September, October.
Oh, wow.
But he's always ignored. He ignored Kenneth completely.
Yeah.
He ignored other people before, but... We have an organization that might help us push him to debate me. So if that comes up, I'll definitely let you know.
Thank you very much. This is David Kim. He's running for Congress. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy and Howes. I hope we all learned something. And I thank you all for listening. And may we again meet in the light of understanding. Thank you for listening for this episode 27's Weedy and Howes, A Tale of Two Cities. This episode highlights the struggles, the indifference, and the plan of action by different community members. We either are part of the solution or we're part of the problem. Right now, we're in a time of transformative change. It is up to us to only start to continue this movement forward to change. We can allow authorities and NIMBYs and police officers and law enforcement to control the narrative, or we as a citizen must put them back in the perspective place that they deserve to be. We are the ones that they serve. It's not the other way around. And we should not be intimidated or bullied by a occupying force that holds with $3.1 billion. Thank you all for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.